These threats that are going to bring in more violence, more deportations, more family separations. And that's why it's important for all of us to come together, for all of the immigrant community to come together, take action, which is a strategy that has never failed us, and to take high risks, because that's the only way that we can win.
Catalina Adorno and Alex Sanchez, I want to thank you for being with us. That does it for our show, our website, democracynow.org. Happy birthday, Rob Young. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Yes, it's time to dig deeper into local news, along with some alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for Friday, July the 28th, 2017. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. And here's what I know from the papers and websites that I can dig into. First of all, I want to thank the Dearborn Press and Guide. I did get a Wednesday paper delivered to my house yesterday, Thursday. So that's close enough, I guess, right? I mean, they missed two in a month, but and I didn't call them to complain, but by golly, I got one on Thursday. So thank you very much. I am paying for it, folks. The Times Herald does actually send a freebie to the college. That I get, although I also pay for a subscription to my house from them because I want to support local media, even though they have no full-time reporters anymore and they mostly just publish press releases. They are acquiring some pretty good part-time reporters who don't have enough time to do investigative reporting, but some pretty good people are making a really very small change. And I do mean small change by being a freelance reporter for the Press and Guide and the Times Herald. And I want to thank them for continuing to do what they do. For example, in the Press and Guide, I wanted to mention early, just to, in case people have been following, the somewhat unfortunate story of Kathleen Buda, our former Dearborn City Clerk, who has been up on a number of charges, embezzlement, larceny, and three common law defenses. She won't be going to jail. That's the story, as reported by Andrea Blum in the Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, July 26. She was sentenced on an embezzlement conviction last Friday, to 24 months probation and ordered to pay $1,683 in costs by Wayne County Circuit Judge Lawrence Tallon. In exchange for a guilty plea on the embezzlement charge and six other counts, the larceny and the common law offenses were dismissed by the judge. The city also filed a brief seeking restitution and forfeiture of Buda's pension, according to Dearborn City Attorney Deborah Walling. Buda's attorney, Gerald Evelyn, requested a stay to appeal the issue, but was denied by the judge. Tallon ordered that the portion of Buda's pension be forwarded from the time that she pleaded guilty to the embezzlement count on December 15th, 2015, until the date of her retirement, February 17th, 2016. Of course, the paper got that wrong. They got that reversed. I'm fairly sure that that the date of her retirement was December 15th, 2015, and when she pleaded guilty, and I didn't know she pleaded guilty and was waiting for sentencing. I thought there was still just the trial and sentencing, but apparently she pleaded guilty to the embezzlement count on February 17th, 2016. Now, I didn't know that. 2016, all those dates seem very mixed up. Either they inverted them, reversed them, Well, it doesn't matter, I guess. But so between the time of her retirement and until she was found guilty, the city wants all that money back. And the statement from Walling said that period will be deducted from her pension time and payments, and we're in the process of calculating those numbers now. The city asks that the retirement benefits associated with the time of offense to the date of retirement be forfeited, and he agreed. In addition, the city asked that its contributions to Buddha's pension during the time period be repaid, and the judge awarded that as well. Buddha originally faced 7 felony charges, and she pleaded no contest to the charges June 22nd. That would be this year. See? So pleading guilty to the embezzlement count on December 15th, 2015 is so wrong. It's just so wrong. So somebody's not checking the facts of the headline story. I mean, it's above the big headline. Okay. I mean, it's the top of the first page of this last Wednesday, July 26th, in terms of getting that straightened out. But I think we get the general idea anyway. She pleaded no contest to the charges June 22nd in Wynn County Circuit Court. I think that was this year. Could have been last year. I don't know. But anyway. So the embezzlement charges carried a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison or a $5,000 fine. Of course, that they didn't go that far. They did a probation. And as we said, it's a 2-year probation. But she has to return the money and return what money she was getting from the pension fund from the city during that time. And now it says here at the end of the story that she retired in February 2016. Okay. So what was there, that investigation or seizure of the files or the first incident that was part of the charges back in December of 2015? I don't know. Now, the question that I have, and I think there's a key word at the beginning here, is what about her ongoing pension? It sounds like that's been forfeited. In other words, she's not going to get any pension from the city and the amount that they've already paid, because the city filed a brief seeking restitution and forfeiture of Buddha's pension. So forfeiture pretty much means that she won't get any more pension from the city of Dearborn at all, ever, even though this issue is settled. It looks like she's paying back for the money she took. At least there's money she is paying back. And of course, the pension money might be more than the money she took that she's losing there. During the time of this court was in session, she was receiving a pension because it hadn't been decided yet. But it looks to me, and this is the unfortunate thing for her and her future, is that she loses all of her pension from the city. She's 66 years old, and so she would qualify, of course, for both Medicare and Social Security. But as I said in the show, since I'm of that age too, I don't know how anyone living comfortably, you know, lower middle class, quote unquote, lifestyle, could survive on Social Security alone. Not that much money. I mean, your house would have to be paid off, and you'd have to eat very little, and you couldn't go anywhere, couldn't take trips. I mean, it's where you have to pay for the so-called gap insurance for Medicaid is when you're less than 62. Medicare is when you're over that age. And much more complete. Medicare is much more complete coverage, except for a gap that they talk about that most people feel that they have to pay the difference. And then there's drugs and prescription drug coverage you have to pay extra too. So that can be a couple $100 or more for people on Medicare, depending on your situation. I can't speak to other people and give you specifics on that. But, personally, I feel sorry for her. And if some people said that she had a gambling problem. And of course, with gambling, there's always the thought, if you're a very positive, optimistic person, there's hope that you can make back the money you lost. Well, the odds are always against you at every point. You say, well, but every new game, it starts, you know, my odds will improve because I have to win eventually. No, you don't. No, you don't. That's the thing about statistics. Take a class in statistics. It's pretty strange. It's pretty unusual. But every time you play a game of chance, the odds are always against you. Okay, they don't get better if you keep playing, you know, one game after the other. They don't. You say, well, they got to. My luck has to change. Luck has nothing to do with it. It's the odds of chance. And if the odds are always against you, as they always are in gambling situations, you could lose all the time forever. And it wouldn't be against the odds because the odds are always against you. In other words, majority of the odds, you know, 4 to 1, 10 to 1, 21. Yeah, it seems to say, well, if it's 20 to 1, one time in 20, I'm going to win. No, not necessarily. That's not the way it works. So I just think it's a sorry situation, and that's been resolved now for those that wanted to know. Okay, looking back at the newspapers from the last couple of weeks, I did want to mention that, well, of course, today is the 28th of July. August 1st starts next Tuesday. A week from August 1st, oh boy, primary election time. And we'll get into some candidate issues and where you can find information about that a little later in the show. But in the Times Herald from July 16th to 22nd, a couple weeks back, they did talk about how Friday at Dearborn Homecoming, that's right, Dearborn Homecoming, 3 days of fun in the sun on Dearborn's Ford Field in West Dearborn, north of Michigan Avenue, off Monroe Street. Monroe Street, after a couple blocks, becomes Ford Field in West Dearborn. And we're going to be there. WHFR, as we have since the late 80s, we're going to have our tent there in the same location as last year before you go over the bridge into the field itself, next to the parking lot, just west of the carnival rides, north of the Polish tent, which is not a tent, but it's a shelter. A permanent fixture just on the side of Monroe Street there as you get to the field. And so we're going to be there, and we're going to have our CD sale tent. And remember, somebody's always saying, I don't have a CD player. Well, remember, you can play them on a DVD player. You say, well, I don't have a DVD player. Well, do you have a computer that has a disk drive in it still? It'll play in that. Yeah. And then you can transcribe it. You can convert it to a digital file if you have to. Okay, but of course, the original CD quality will always be there. They last a long, long time. Nobody's ever said yet since they were first came out in the 1980s, some almost 50 years ago, that they fall apart, that they corrode. I've never seen one, never heard of that happening. So much more long-lived than any vinyl recording or any tape recording, certainly. And so we're selling them. Our usual donation price is $1 per CD, and all different kinds of artists and formats, and probably something that is not in the mainstream, although we're getting donations from Dearborn Music and some other stores and personal collections of our DJs. So there are some popular things, so-called popular things, that we don't play on the air and we wouldn't play because it's not our format. We play things equal to or better than what's already popular. And it varies, like in the big band music show and sometimes in blues, where we, you know, those are formats that are just not that popular. So we play some of the things that actually became popular, like back in the 40s for a big band. That's the way it goes. But I'm just saying, we have all kinds of CDs and over 2,000, close to 3,000 available from our own WHFR collection. And anything you find and give us a dollar for, will help to support WHFR. That's always important. But we'll also have our WHFR logo items. We have our new T-shirts, which are Heather Gray, very cool, with a dark blue logo on the front. So I personally think they don't stand out as much. You know, of course, I wanted bright blue or bright green or something because I want people to see me, you know, when I'm wearing it. who is that? That really is a bright color, but we didn't go for bright this year. We went for subtle. It's very classy. So if you need one of those T-shirts, I think we're selling them at $10 each. And so they are very nice. And also we have some other logo items that you might want to consider purchasing too. So we hope to see you there, and we'll be broadcasting live. This show, in fact, yes, yours truly, I will be on live from 1 to 2 o'clock from Ford Field, Dearborn's Ford Field, at our WHFR tent. Actually, we have two tents, one for broadcasting right next to the big CD sale tent. So you could come out there and wave. You can stand right in front of me and laugh and point fingers. You can't make noise, though. We'll have to carry you away. But and we probably have some of the politicians that will be walking around, and we might have Mayor O'Reilly at that time, or Chief of Police Ron Haddad. He loves to be interviewed by us. He just loves it. And we all want to know what's happening with the police situation, you know. And he's very upfront, very transparent, if you will, whenever we ask him to. Whenever we ask him anything, he fills us in, you know, and that's your public servant. Got to be that way. So we'll be out there. We'll be having fun from 11 o'clock to 8 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, of course, all the entertainment on the field is free. There's food to choose from. This year, a whole tent set up in the location, I understand, where there was a Polish tent set up in years past before they moved to the shelter, the permanent shelter, just west of Monroe Street at the field. So right down there on the parking lot side, the south side of the Ford Field, will be a huge Arab American tent, and Arab American organizations, but also Arab American food, finally represented much better than in the past. Sometimes there's been no Arab American food vendor anywhere on the field, which was really strange, and I've said this before. And now, thanks to Access, they've got it organized, and they got the vendors together, and we're going to have a whole tent of Arab American food and, like, different organizations like the Arab American National Museum, and Access will have a table, too, and all significantly a part of Dearborn. So if you're going to celebrate Dearborn, you have to have the Arab American presence these days. Well, for the last decade or two, we really should have. So that's great. So look for all different kinds of food, all different kinds of carnival rides for an extra cost, of course, too, and a lot of free entertainment. Friday, though, getting back to the original story here, as it has been for the last couple of years, the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring and organizing a special All-Stars Day for children with special needs and adults with special needs. And so they'll all have the opportunity to participate in the fun and excitement of the Dearborn Homecoming on that Friday. From 9 to 11, for example, the All-Stars will be the guests of Wade Shows Incorporated and get free rides on several selected rides. And there will be a Dearborn fire truck down there for people to look at from this group. And if you want to register, and if you or your children or you're a child and you have an adult that has a special needs qualification here, you can register online at DearbornAreaChamber.org, or you can call them, because registration is needed. Right? You can call them at 313-584-6100. That's the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. You can also go to their office, which is in the Bryant Library on the first floor in West Dearborn. Okay? So again, that number of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce, 313-584-6100. And remember, WHFR, we're going to be there from 11 a.m. all the way to 8 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday next weekend. Hope to see you out there. Come and introduce yourselves. Let me know who's listening. Okay? It's always great to find out who's listening and what they really think. Don't tell me that while I'm broadcasting, but afterwards, I'll be there. And I'll be there through the weekend, a couple hours on Saturday and Sunday, too. So maybe I can catch you, find out who you are. A lot of people, even in the grocery store where I shop in Dearborn, people hear me just saying something at checkout. I say, oh, you're that radio guy. Something about my voice, I guess. Just something about that radio voice. Okay. So much for that. Dearborn Times Herald from this last week, July 26. Just a notice for those of you who have a dog in Dearborn, the city's first dog park, it'll be at 16301 Michigan Avenue, will open at 11 a.m. August 19th to dog owners. Residents and their pets will have 2.3 acres south of Henry Ford Centennial Library. South. I thought that was a big parking lot. I guess they changed it. Anyway, you can play with your dogs from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. through November 15th. And they're closing the dog park, I guess, on November 15th for that. Users of the dog park will be required to purchase an annual $30 permit from the city clerk's office. Proof of Dearborn residency will be required, and a copy of the dog's license, too, and proof of current vaccinations at the time you get the permit. And the park will be divided into two areas for either small or large dogs. Large dogs are classified as weighing more than 30 pounds. Both areas will be enclosed with a fence and accessible through a gate. Crushed stone paths for walking routes, benches for sitting, which is for the tired humans, of course, dog waste bags, waste disposal stations, water access, and dog agility equipment. Dog agility equipment. Don't know what that is. Will be featured at the park. Things for dogs to jump over, maybe? I don't know. Then read the next paragraph, Coronet. Yes, here it is. Always read these articles through, folks. I always tell you that, but then sometimes I don't. Dog agility equipment includes adjustable jump bars, elevated agility walk platforms, walk ramps, hurdles, teeter-totters for dogs, and he says with a question mark, and barrels. And that is thanks to a $15,000 donation from the Oakwood Group. And I'm not sure if that's doctors, because it's not the hospital, that's Beaumont now, but through the Oakwood Group. $15,000 of agility equipment. Wow. Anyway, rules for the dog park state that dogs in the park must wear a collar or harness with tags. Owners of dogs must carry a leash in case the dog needs to be restrained or walk to and from the dog park. Owners have to dispose of animal waste themselves and monitor their dog's behavior. And it has to be accompanied by a human handler 17 years old and up. Children under 8 years old are not allowed in the dog park at all. Okay. And children ages 9 to 16 must be accompanied by an adult. And there's fines for violating the dog park rules. My goodness. So there's a lot of details. But if you go to the city clerk's office, where you won't find Kathleen Buda, of course, you can pay for an annual $30 permit. Now, I just wonder, let me turn to page 8A. Okay, that's the end of the story here. I guess you have to pay it this year, the whole $30, even though it only starting on August 19th and going through November. Because normally I would think a dog park would be open, what, springtime? And then go. So they should give you a discount for that, right? Ask them. Go ahead. Tell them WHFR Journal said they should ask nicely about whether or not they can get a discount for this year. Probably not. Oh, and the Dearborn Recreation Parks Department is seeking volunteers for its dog park support committee to work with the department in monitoring and enforcing the rules. So if you want to volunteer, there's a number in the story there, probably on the cityofdearborn.org website too. Okay, so that was a big deal, I thought. Yep. Also, residents are encouraged to get involved in Dearborn downtowns. And of course, last week I mentioned that there was a meetup at Joe's Top Dog, and they told us about it in an email from the city just one day before. So who's finding out about this? Well, if you turn to the end of the story, again in the Times Herald from this last Tuesday, you find out there's two more meetups. And again, they say residents. Okay. So on July 28th, from 9 to 10, it's business leaders and managers have a meetup. But in the evening, from 5 to 7, there's, you know, other people could attend, I guess, too. It's a community showcase of some kind. And this is at West Village Commons in downtown West Dearborn from 5 to 7 on July 28th. In August, the second business leader and manager meetup is scheduled from 11 to noon on August 10th at City Hall Park, 13615 Michigan Avenue. And I think City Hall Park is still what they're calling the park near Artscape, where the City Hall used to be. So it should be called Old City Hall Park, right? Or is this New City? So better check the address there. But then again, there's also on August 10th, August 25th, there is a community meetup from 5 to 6 p.m. So you got some advance notice here. And you might say, well, I'm not writing this down. So I don't know when it's going to be. I'll just forget about it. But they want everybody, not just the business people, although that's really what downtown Dearborn organizations have always been about, just the people who are operating businesses. But they really want everybody to be involved in those, you know, residents living near there, certainly, as well as business people. Because if the residents don't go and shop in the businesses there for one reason or another, that's not going to be good. Because that's their primary market, I would assume, is the people that could walk there or drive there real quick. Now, what they're doing is they're getting their own website. And it's going to be downtowndearborn.org. But that's soon. Okay. They have a Facebook page, so you can just go to facebook.com and you can put in Downtown Dearborn and see what pops up. But they will have their own website, but not quite yet, downtowndearborn.org, which will tell you about these meetings. All right. Moving on. Let's see, what do we have here? Something else that fell out of the paper. Oh, yes, of course. Henry Ford College, next weekend, is presenting another play, just one play after the other here. And they're great. I mean, you probably know about Players Guild and other recreation department theatrical presentations still continuing over the summer. But who else but us would talk about Henry Ford College, right? The play is going to be Shooting Stars. That's what it's going to be called. August 4th to 13th, right here on the main campus of Henry Ford College in our Fine Arts Center. And it'll run for 6 performances next weekend and the following weekend. Okay. Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Yes. And Friday, Saturday, 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. So Friday, Saturday next weekend and Sunday at 2 p.m. Next weekend, I know, Dearborn Homecoming. So I'm going to be out there, so I won't make it that weekend, I know, but maybe the next weekend. The play is directed this time by Mary Brimmer Beer, who teaches theater here at HFC, and Shooting Stars is the second play of the HFC Summer Stock Program, as they call it. The story takes place during the week of Christmas in 1962, specifically in the locker room of a small town gym. Ah, summertime. Great time for a Christmas play. Well, I mean, if it's hot, you think cool. Think cold, and that'll maybe cool you down, huh? So in this locker room of a small-town gym, a touring women's basketball team called the Shooting Stars are preparing to face off against a local men's basketball team. Ah. Male versus female. Mm-hmm. And then all kinds of things happen. And it's the play was written by Molly Newman, an Emmy Award-winning television writer and producer, and a Tony Award nominee. Tony's awards are for Broadway. She began her playwriting career as co-author of Quilters, and Quilters, yes. And she has written for the TV series Murphy Brown, Frasier, Larry Sanders Show, Code Black, Brothers and Sisters, Political Animals, Lucky, Tarzan, Seventh Heaven, Maximum Bob, Cupid, and Tracy Takes On, which is Tracy Ullman Show. So those are all very well-written productions. I haven't watched Tarzan too often, but The others I know of, very high quality work, especially Murphy Brown, which is mentioned first. And tickets for Shooting Stars are $12 general admission, $10 for senior citizens, students with a valid photo ID, and HFC employees get in for $10 also. If you want to purchase tickets in advance, go to theater, that's T-R-E, theater, T-R-E, like the French théâtre, okay, .hfcc.edu. Of course, you can just get there early, and I think the doors open a half an hour before showtime. Always exciting to watch the high-quality productions here at Henry Ford College, and so special, so different than watching anything on television. Really, I mean, it's a totally different experience. It's real life. I know, it's a radical concept, I know, but anyway. So try to get down here. I know next weekend is homecoming weekend, but maybe you can schedule it in between your appearances outside at Dearborn Homecoming. And because this Dearborn Homecoming does have some entertainment after 8 o'clock at night, but this is 8 o'clock on Friday and Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday next weekend and the weekend after that here at Henry Ford College, Adrey Auditorium in our Fine Arts Center, main campus. Okay, looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide, about halfway through the new WHFR Journal for Friday, July 15th. Obviously, WHFR.fm, we are the station making waves. We do things a little bit differently than other stations. We're non-commercial, first of all. You probably noticed that, right? But we really are oriented and want to support our local community and our local musicians, too. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Highway 61 with Kitty Love. A lot of blues for you. Somebody used to use the phrase, blues you can use. I'm not sure how you use blues, but it's great. A lot of people say it's perfect for Fridays, TGIF. Yep. And, of course, after Kitty Love, who's on from 2 to 4, 4 to 6, Mike Holloway's Go With the Flow blues show. And that's always exciting. A lot more great blues music for you that's not featured anywhere else in Detroit to this extent. Yep. So on this special edition, at least for me anyway, of Wednesday's Press and Guide, there's they do their own questioning and story. Thank you, Sue Suchita, for the 10 candidates running for 4 council seats. All the candidates were given questions, a word limit, for their responses. And that has to do with Dearborn Heights, though. This is the Dearborn Heights people, and there's 10 running for 4 seats. And if there's 4 seats, I would assume the primary, week from next Tuesday, this will be August 8th, week from next Tuesday, the primary election will reduce those 10 to 8. Because they still, that's the way they do it for the election in November. They want to have at least double the number of spaces on the ballot. Just like in Dearborn for council, there are 16 candidates who are on the ballot. And the primary is only going to reduce that to 14. Because there are 7 available seats. They're all up for grabs, so to speak. And the primary will reduce the number to 2 times the number of seats. So who's ever the bottom 2 after the primary, hey, won't be around for November. So be sure to vote, whether it's Dearborn Heights or Dearborn, even though there's actually not that many fewer candidates for those offices. For mayor, yeah, it's going to be reduced, I think, in both cities. Well, in Dearborn Heights, it'll be reduced from 3 to 2. And in Dearborn, it'll be reduced from 4 candidates in the primary to 2 candidates on the ballot in November. There's no issues, no proposals. There's no millages for the cities or for Wayne County that I know of at this point. I'm always surprised something sneaks in at the last minute, but I believe it's only candidates for mayor, clerk, city council, depending on what's needed in whatever city you're in. But that's so important, folks. As we've said on the show many times, what matters to you most is what's local. Things that are right next door in your community. Because you can make a big difference too, not just voting, but also in how you want to change laws or bring attention to problems that you just have to call your council person. Maybe call your mayor's office if you have to. Things can get done. It doesn't take that much effort. It's a lot easier anyway, comparatively speaking, than trying to work with the county or the state or the federal government. So your participation in local elections like the primary and the big local election coming up in November is very, 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 very important because it matters more to you. And you can affect it more, too. Even if somebody gets in you don't like, you can influence them in a much bigger way than you can influence anyone for a higher, so-called a higher office, a larger jurisdiction. So I might go over those. We'll see how much time I have. I want to hit some other stories first here before we do the candidate rundown today. We'll do more next Friday, too, of course. And hopefully we'll have a few candidates that decide to talk to us out at Dearborn Homecoming. And we'll see how many I can fit in. I'm not promising 30 minutes because that would just mean two for that show and the show is done. But maybe one person or maybe a couple people for 5 or 10 minutes each during our 1 hour for next week. If you are a candidate for either Dearborn or Dearborn Heights and you want 30 minutes of time on the show, then after the primary, and you can schedule any time by sending me an email. Just send it to whfr at hfcc.edu and put something about journal in the subject line, journal appearance, or something like that. And I'll get that within a day, and I'll call you back, email you back, whatever you prefer, and we'll get you scheduled. But you have to be a challenger. Darn it. Yeah, incumbents, I don't have enough time. I won't have enough shows between August and November to get people on the air. So I can't do the incumbents, and I apologize. There's a lot of really great incumbents out there for all the offices that are seeking re-election. I won't say which ones I think are great. Trying to be nonpartisan here, non-specific, with my own opinions about candidate quality. I'll let you judge for yourself. But if you don't already know how good or bad an incumbent is, then either you haven't been keeping up or they haven't been doing a very good job. They've just been sitting back and going to some of the meetings, maybe not all of them, and collecting their part-time money. Who knows? But this goes for mayor, people running for mayor, people running for city clerk, people running for council in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. If you want a 30-minute interview on the show sometime before November, send me an email to start with, whfr at hfcc.edu, and I'm happy to arrange the best time. First come, first served. At some point, even then, even with only challengers, I can't get everybody in. Just the way it goes. But maybe this will help you. A lot of current candidates at the Dearborn City Council got that WHFR bump when they were first running. So it's not wasted time, and it's free. Yes. No charge. Imagine. Okay. I don't see anything else in the pressing guide there. Let's look back to the other news of the day. He reaches to random pages, Xerox from websites I've been looking at. Again, the Arab American News from last, talking about candidates from last week, which is still current as of today. They'll have a new one out tomorrow, though. Wow, they've got to meet the candidates' stories for Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, for consul, for clerk. Well, there's no Dearborn Heights clerk race, apparently. Mayor Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. And they asked their three questions. I went over some of those for Dearborn Heights mayoral candidates last week, but this is a great addition. Now, that's available on their website at least the last couple weeks of Arab American News editions are available on their website, arabamericannews.com, and you just download the PDF file. Okay, it's not their current stories, perhaps, but you can get the whole paper just the way it looks when it's printed out for your computer, then, and you can read it, or your tablet, or your smartphone if you had a big enough screen or good eyes, and you can read it on that. So it was a great issue last week in terms of surveying the candidates and what they stand for, although some of the questions, what can you do with three questions and, you know, a limit of words for each question even. Can't get into anything really nitty-gritty that I can do in 30 minutes. Oh, my gosh. What I do in 30 minutes. Look out. But I'll try to be fair, and all the candidates will get the same questions, although I'm always reserved a chance to follow up on something if needed. And if somebody says something that just, and it's only happened a couple times, but just totally, they try to give, you know, a statement about how something is, and I know it's false. I know that is not true. I'm not saying they're lying, but I know it's not true, and I have to interrupt. And I have to indicate to them, I believe that's not true. And I have to tell them my source. I had to do that with a candidate for, I won't say who it was, but a candidate for local representative to Lansing one time. That person did not win, by the way. But they were spouting all kinds of things about state government and taxes, especially. I think it was something about taxes. We pay the highest taxes in the whole country. No, we don't. No, we're right in the middle, actually. Michigan's taxes are not that high. Not for businesses, not for people. Oh, we all want lower taxes, but I'm just saying, and including some other factors. I mean, income tax, sales tax, and, you know, if you look at all, and property taxes, if you toss it all together, Michigan is not too shabby when it comes to its tax situation for people and businesses. It's about in the middle. It's not the best, not the worst. It's about in the middle of 50. So that's not too bad. It's not something to say, oh, we have terrible amount of taxes. No, not really. And some states that have very low like or no income taxes, like, let's say, New Hampshire, whoa, look out for property taxes. Whoa, those will knock you for a loop. They have to make up the difference somehow, right? So all things figured in, go to a place like on the website, National Taxpayers Union. They have some great research there. They're not Republican. They're not Democrat. And they just want lower taxes, of course. But they have very good research. And so I'm just saying sometimes it's very rare. One time in 100 or 200. But if you get, if you say something that's really false, then I have to interrupt and tell our listeners, I'm sorry, that's false. I have to do it. That's my only claim to journalistic integrity. Because I'm not a journalist. I'm secondhand journalist, if you will. I depend on reports. But I do read them critically. And when I have a question, like dates or times or, you know, I will bring them up on the air and then you'll have to decide, I guess, because I can only go so far with the time I have. Okay. Arab American News. Check out their edition from last week. Still available on their website. And they will have a new edition tomorrow, but their big candidate edition was out last week. You might still find some copies around town, but every time I look for a physical copy, they're all gone. Because they're free and they're really good, so a lot of people do grab them first thing. And the new issue always appears in various places around Dearborn and on Saturdays. I sometimes maybe Friday nights, but Saturdays usually. Okay. A couple weeks ago, more than that, almost a month ago, Metro Times noticed that a Detroit Free Press editor resigned after only 2 years. And he was forced to resign. He was the top editor at the Detroit Free Press, big-time newspaper. And he was forced to resign after less than 2 years on the job. And this was noted in the Metro Times back on Friday, July 7th. It shocked and saddened a newsroom at the Detroit Free Press that had lost about two-thirds of its staff since media giant Gannett took over Michigan's largest newspaper in August 2005. How can you run a big-time metro newspaper with two-thirds less staff? Two-thirds less reporters? Gannett removed this person, whose name was Robert Hushka, He was an 18-year veteran of the Free Press from his position as executive editor because the newspaper has been struggling with online page views and revenue and wasn't churning out enough meaningful news under his leadership, according to four reporters and an editor that the Metro Times talked to. When he was named executive editor 2 years ago, many journalists in the newsroom were surprised because he didn't have the professional caliber of his predecessors and for years was quiet and relatively indistinguishable at a newspaper with its share of stars. A desk man who understood layout and digital content but lacked experience as a reporter, the St. Clair Shores residents grew into the job and gained respect as an affable, loyal, and sometimes goofy boss. But it wasn't an easy time for him. And so he was removed. He was replaced in the interim by Jeff Taylor, who served as the newspaper's senior managing editor until July 2012, when he took the top editing job at the Indianapolis Star, another Gannett publication. So I guess he'll be coming back from Indianapolis. Hushka, however, maintained a positive tone in a statement he made. He's going to go on to his next adventure. Blah, blah, blah. But just shows about the decline of newspapers, big-time papers, small-town newspapers. People, you aren't reading them, you aren't subscribing, or you aren't going online to check out their homepage enough. Because every time that happens, they realize you were there, they count you, and that adds to their possible revenue from, you know, banner ads. Page ads that are on the page, either pop-ups or off in the corner or whatever. That's how they have to survive. So, and one other thing that the Metro Times mentioned just a week later, well, not quite a week later, July 12th, is that the Detroit Free Press, I guess under the Mr. Taylor, is that they changed their font. That is the shape of the letters. There's many different fonts, many different styles that are all, you know, consistent among themselves. A font means that the A's and the B's and the small case and the lowercase are all the same. And there's many, many fonts out there that can be used. But Detroit Free Press was always that sort of old English style, you know, a little fancy. And it's also the same Old English D from Detroit Free Press, the D in Detroit, that represents the Detroit Tigers. So if you have Detroit Tigers cap or jersey or something, you see the D that's in the Old English font style. Well, guess what? Online, they change it to a new sort of modern font, and Free Press doesn't like it. But the newspaper stays the same. But I guess they're trying to feel that, gee, well, people will be turned away if we don't have a modern font there. But, of course, they're losing the brand identity they had for 100 years or more. And since the 1830s. They used it. So definitely more than 100 years. So maybe the Taylor said, oh, we got to go have more people on our website if the font for Detroit Free Press is modern. Gee whiz. By the way, Gannett also owns USA Today newspaper, and they probably proclaim it right under the heading on their website, Detroit Free Press, part of the USA Today network. Ooh, big deal. USA Today that never gives you a long story no matter how much you need one. That's my opinion. Remember, opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. All right. Just had to tell you about that because that's media news. We're the media. We got to give you media news too, right? You probably knew this. Detroit ranks third to last for driver-friendly roads. And the Metro Times back on July 12th said, an opinion of theirs, honestly, we're not surprised. So, and apparently 2 weeks before that, the Metro Times reported that Detroit drivers were ranked as the best in the country. Well, they have to be in order to avoid all the potholes, I guess. You see how that fix, how you figure that out? Best in the country in terms of looking at the data that came from DUIs, driving under influence, accidents, number of accidents, number of speeding tickets, and other kinds of citations. So we were the best in the country of any city in the country in terms of those kinds of problems. However, WalletHub studied Detroit as the third worst city for drivers out of the 100 largest cities in the United States. So cost of ownership and maintenance, traffic and infrastructure. Infrastructure is those bridges and roads. Safety issues and access to vehicles and maintenance. So that's not good, right? But we know how bad the roads are in Michigan. We know how much it'll cost to fix them. Governor Snyder even knows. But will the Republican legislature vote it into place? Will they put appropriate taxation for the people that can pay the most in order to fix the infrastructure that we all need? No. So it's still a problem. You say, well, didn't they pass something? Yeah, and the money might start kicking in a little bit, but it's not enough. The roads and the bridges are getting bad faster than what even the new money is going to pay for. And even Governor Snyder, big-time Republican, has said several times, including a big commission he set up, a sort of independent commission about what it will take to get our roads and bridges going again. Nobody listened to them either. Because what do they know? They're just the experts, right? So that's a big negative on our legislature in terms of trying to take care of the people here in Michigan. You mentioned Taylor. I'll do this as briefly as I can. Last week, a while back, their police chief was appointed by Governor Snyder to, I think, some sort of prosecuting attorney in one of the court system somewhere, sort of promotion for her. So they're getting a new police chief, obviously, sometime. And all of a sudden, their mayor decided to quit. That was a woman, too. Not that that matters. And no reason was given in the story anyway. And so they're going to have to, the city council out there is going to have to appoint someone. Well, on the Taylor Board of Ed, I think we reported this, is that there was a dispute in an election, probably not last November. A write-in person seemed to have won. David Myers thought he won over incumbent on the Taylor Board of Education, Ron Miller. Well, after a lengthy court battle and a recount, 8 months later, Miller, the incumbent, is actual winner, and they declared that on July 11th, and a recount certified he had 444 votes to Myers' 398. Recounts don't often even come that close. Sometimes they win, but not often. So it was a difference after the recount of 46 votes. That made the difference. And so Wayne County Circuit Chief Judge Robert Colombo Jr. made the ruling and was also at the board meeting when he was officially seated, and he did the swearing in this last Monday. So congratulations to Miller, who is back on the Taylor Board of Ed. Democracy in action. It takes 8 months to recount 800 votes. I can't figure that one out. I can't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. But they had some court disputes too, so maybe they actually had to go to court to say whether or not this vote was valid or not. I don't know the whole story, but that's a recount taking 8 months. That's just not right. I'm sure you all agree. But at least they have to be counted, and it has to be counted right, and it has to be counted with all the legitimate votes. Yep. Okay, take a look at pressandguide.com, that website. Looks like this weekend they will have a story about the 16 people running for the 7 seats on the Dearborn City Council. Again, Sue Suchita has switched from Dearborn Heights from this last Wednesday to Dearborn City Council. And they will be asking them three questions too, and you can see what response each of them give. And of course, out of those 16 people, let's see, four are incumbents: Abraham, Bazzi, DeBaggia, and O'Donnell, and Cerini. Is that five? Oh, well. But those incumbents may not be returned unless you vote for them, if you want to. Three of them clearly are extremely young, and one of the questions was, what political experience do you have? Yeah, because this is politics. And I would say if you don't have any political experience, you probably won't even get elected, because the first step of being a good politician is getting elected. Yeah, getting people to vote for you. And you say, well, don't you mean, you know, once you're in office, how do I do the job appropriately and get what I want in that office? Yeah, that's politics too. But the first problem for a potential elected official is to get elected. And you have to have certain political skills and political knowledge. And you can get them from all kinds of places. You can get it from books, believe it or not, from friends, relatives, whatever. But you have to pull it all together in order to be successful. You have to get endorsements. You have to get supporters. I know that several of the candidates seem to be sharing campaign headquarters. And they were using the same staff to get out the mailings and do posters and that, because they were friends or similar-minded people. And so it matters. And even if you didn't have previous political experience for local government, maybe that's not so important. I'm just suggesting, you know, because you have to be, as I said, you have to be somewhat a politician or you're not going to get elected. So all these people running for government, such as our current president, said, I'm not a politician, but I can do a better job. Well, that's not the opinion of a vast majority of people in the United States of America, that the non-politician president that we have now is doing a better job than somebody that actually knows what's required and how to do it already. And there's a question about that swamp, too, that metaphor. Gonna drain the swamp. Yeah. What swamp was that? All of Washington, D.C. was a swamp to start with, and then they did some land reclamation, and then they built on that land. But so there is no swamp, literally. But, yeah, I mean, who was the swamp? The Democrats? I mean, who was the swamp? The politicians? The lobbyists? You know, the bankers? Well, the lobbyists and the bankers are still there, so that swamp hasn't been drained. Makes you wonder. But locally, I think good people, but smart people. And I think most of the young people with no political experience, they've all got, I think, master's degrees in something. So, oh my gosh, not just a bachelor's degree, but a master's degree, which means they know something. Whether or not it's appropriate knowledge and whether or not they can apply it effectively, that's another question. I don't think that question or the answers to that question really matter that much for local office. If the people are intelligent and have learned a lot of things, and of course, and a degree, especially all the way to a master's degree, does mean that you've learned a lot of things satisfactorily or better, or you wouldn't have gotten that degree. Successful in business? Yeah, that could be something. A real go-getter entrepreneur, even if he or she didn't finish college, you know. What about years on the Dearborn Board of Education? One of the candidates has that background. What do you think about that? Is that appropriate to running the city? You have to decide that. But I'm just saying there's all kinds of experience, political experience, whatever that means. And I think that is disputed. That can be disputed. Is not if they say no political experience. And I think that's a bogus response anyway. It sounds bad to a lot of people. But it shouldn't necessarily, depending on what you're running for and what other skills and knowledge you bring to bear on things. So look for that story. It's on the Dearborn Press and Guide.com website right now. Probably be in their Sunday edition. 16 people running for 7 seats on the Dearborn City Council. How do you get more information about these people? Well, the questions that the Arab American News and the Dearborn Times-Herald and Press and Guide ask the candidates, even though they're all very brief, but they're different questions. There's already questions that have been reported by the several different means of the League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. First off, there's a voter's guide. At least my copy is printed on yellow paper. And you'll find that at the Dearborn City Clerk's office, usually. They have piled them up there. And that gives you actually 4 questions that are answered by every candidate for each office. Some candidates, hard to believe, did not return their questionnaires. So that's completely blank. And that does raise the question about those people as candidates. But look for a copy of the League of Women Voters voter guide for the primary election August 8th. It's around town, but certainly at the city clerk's office. It's, of course, you can go to League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, just the letters there at their website.org. So that's LWVDDH.org. Also, you can go to vote411.org. That's set up and maintained by the League of Women Voters National Office. But you just put in your zip code where you live, and all the local candidates and local information will pop up on your screen, on your computer, your tablet, whatever you have. So highly recommend that as another source, because a lot of candidates out there, a lot of new candidates, far too many for them to be on this show and to go in depth with them. And so you need to educate yourself if you want the best representation and the best government in your local area, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights. That's all the time we have. It's about 2 o'clock or so. Oh, 29 seconds, 30 seconds after. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to. Come on back again and either listen to or come on down to Ford Field in West Dearborn next Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock. Weather permitting, technology permitting, we'll be out there with another edition of the new WHFR Journal. So take care and let's keep in touch. Here's Highway 61.